Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another awesome episode of the Biff Bites podcast. I'm your host, Jerry Mee, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Adam Scheer. How you doing, Adam?
Doing great, Jerry. Great to be recording this next episode. We're on the cusp of November CFP exam cycle, but really happy to have a special guest with us today to talk shop.
Yeah, definitely. We got a great guest, Mr. Anthony Ruffalo. How are you doing today, Anthony?
What's up, gentlemen?
Not much. So, Anthony, you run Ruffalo Wealth Management, and we thought you'd be a great guest to bring on because you're really on kind of like the cutting edge of incorporating, you know, social media and video as ways to reach out to clients and grow your customer base. And we just kind of wanted to do a deep dive into a little bit of your history with it to kind of see how you started on this path and, you know, how you feel it's been going for your business.
All right. Well, make sure you're not in the shallow end when you do the deep dive. We don't want you to wind up in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
But we are recording that. I just spoke for 7 minutes.
I know. I felt so bad. Anthony did this great intro. It was so far away. This is awesome. But let me hit record first.
No, it's actually much better because I can tighten it up because I know I was squirreling. I was going in circles.
That was just the rough draft. That was the dress rehearsal.
That's awesome. Well, I appreciate you guys having me on. I hate using the word humbling because I think it's just like the word just gets like thrown around now as like I don't know. I don't think it has like the word doesn't have the same gravity as it used to because everybody overuses it. It's kind of like the word amazing. Like everyone, oh, that's amazing. Like you on social media, you see amazing 42 times a day. And it's like, yeah, no, I don't, the word just doesn't have the same gravity anymore, but I appreciate you guys even caring enough to listen to me ramble for a couple of minutes and have you on your podcast. So yeah. Where do we want to, I'm a good bullet point. Give me bullet points and then I'll just.
Perfect. Well, yeah. I mean, I think really to start off is, you know, how has your practice changed since the start? Because you are kind of on this like perfect time frame where you kind of saw the industry develop in front of your eyes, you know, where you wanted to start you're using this social media tool. And for the longest time, advisors weren't allowed to because of compliance reasons. But then, you know, in the last couple of years, that sort of started to change. So I'd kind of just like to see your, you know, boots on the ground perspective of what that looked like in the industry.
Yeah. So I've been grinding away since 2005 is when I started in the industry. And, you know, fast forward, I got to a point where I opened a storefront office. It was about 2019. And, you know, I own an LPL practice, and they've got a marketing department, and they said, what do you want to do to grow? Cause I'm like, hey, it's go time. I got married, had kids, you know, it was just like, you know, trying to live life. You got all these different things going on. I'm like, nope, now it's time to really double down on the practice, focus and grow now. So I've always wanted to do video because I think that they're, you know, people locally in my community have known, oh, that's Anthony, but he's a financial guy, but they don't necessarily know that I'm a, you know, personal financial planner, tax, retirement, invest, like what do you do other than, you know, it's hard to articulate that when you get cornered at, you know, at a barbecue or, you know, at a cocktail party or wherever you're at, because, you know, usually like half in the bag anyway, you're not making any sense. And, you know, you don't, you're like, I should have said this and this, and it just doesn't work out. So I went to 2019. I was like, I want to grow. So I went to this Gary V thing down in Florida. And I'd met a bunch of, you know, all sort of insurance people, mortgage people, financial people, all backgrounds, all industries. And I was just listening to some of these people talk about the growth rates that they were experiencing from just doing social. And I was like, this is crazy. I feel like I'm on the right track. I just got to go do it. So I came back and I posted my first video. It was February of 2019. That was a year before the pandemic. And I just started posting stupid little, you know, videos of like, hey, this is, you know, this is what I do. I'm a financial planner. I think one of my early videos even talked about the Federal Reserve and how they control interest rates. And I was really struggling. I had a yellow pad and I would just write down like what I was doing for the day. And I would just literally read the yellow pad to the camera and say, you know, hey, I called this client back. I did this and this and so on and so forth. And then one day I was in the driveway at my neighbor's house and his 8-year-old kid, Caleb, was running around and he had a fireman's hat on and it was right around April. And I was like, that's all all I'm doing is putting out fires. I'm putting out tax fires right now. It's all I'm doing. So I said, hey, can I borrow that hat? And he goes, yeah, why? I'm like, don't worry about it. I'll give it back to you in a couple of days. So I borrowed the hat and I used the fireman's hat. And that was the first kernel, the first seed of being able to incorporate humor into what I was kind of doing. And that video was the best performing video. And it wasn't anything like fancy. It was just me wearing the stupid hat and just talking about putting out fires. And it was a child's fireman's hat. Mm-hmm. And then I started doing more funny things.
Yep.
And that's really where I started getting traction.
Yeah. I mean, you see, it's funny what kind of latches on. The littlest of changes can completely increase viewership and, you know, bring people in. You know, I looked at a bunch of your videos before we had you on. And, you know, I noticed sort of things with the videos, like the thumbnails you use, you have really bright colors and, you know, superimposed images on it that really, you know, catch the eye. And there's all sorts of like little editing items that you do that really just increase engagement. And I've kind of noticed that it's almost become like a science in the video marketing world these days of, you know, how do you get your video in front of eyeballs? Because it's not like the clients have any shortage of videos to watch these days. You know, everyone and their mother is making financial advising videos, it seems like.
Yeah, I hate when people's moms make financial videos too.
Yeah. well, speaking of that, Adam let me know that you've done a little bit of sparring with some of the TikToker financial advisors, the maybe less accredited individuals out there who are still giving out financial advice.
Yeah, I try, and they're just a frustrating bunch because you don't know. You're like, are you really that dumb? Number one, are you that ignorant that you don't know what it is that you're doing? Which that's a problem in and of itself. That's like, I have to educate you before I can even debate you. And I don't have time for that. So there's that, or on the other hand, it's, are you really that sleazy of a human being where you just have absolutely no regard for the future outcomes, and you really are just trying to make a sale because it's an easy sale. Mm-hmm. I think that from what I see, I think a lot of them, and I say dumb, I know that sounds harsh, but I think a lot of them are just young, undereducated, don't understand. Because I remember when I was 25, 26, 27, and I got sold by corporate on some of the things. And I thought, oh, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. But I didn't have the knowledge base enough to refute what the older people who look successful were telling me. Mm-hmm. I think that's really the case. Because I tend to want to think that people in this business are good. They really, truly want to help people. And it's really around IUL, IUL stuff. They think that they've solved this problem with, you know, they can insulate people from market losses or volatility, but then also they think they figured out this secret way to borrow and then get compounding on compounding. Yeah. So I find that the community does a good job. Like, it's rampant on TikTok because it's the platform, the culture of that platform doesn't allow you to interact in a way where you can refute or handle that stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's just too much volume. On LinkedIn, these people get slaughtered.
Right. Because you just reply and you're like, this isn't true. This
Well, you reply, and then you also, you have a much, it's a smarter platform. It's a corporate, more educated platform, and people are just, it's aged up and it's more intelligent, and they have a better understanding of finances and financial products. Mm-hmm. Whereas TikTok is, you know, I mean, it's kids.
Yeah. I love, I saw a video where it was, this person was like, "Hey guys, I just discovered this amazing tax secret that no one knows about. It's great. It's going to save you so much money. I can't believe the IRS doesn't know about this. No one's doing this. It's called a backdoor Roth IRA contribution." It's just like, I don't think you discovered that, buddy.
not only did you discover it, but number one, does it make financial sense?
Right.
Does the person even need the backdoor?
Yeah, because they're advising them to do a backdoor Roth, and they could have just contributed to the Roth outright because they're only making, you know, $30,000 a year.
Yeah, that. And then also, does the person also have other IRA assets, and you're going to trigger a pro rata rule?
Right.
And additional taxation on the conversion.
But can't get into any of that in a 30-second TikTok video.
No, you I don't know. I think that's just, but it's what that is, though, is that's it's human. It's just reflective of human nature. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, you know, it's, I call it young man syndrome, because as a young man, I think all young men have to go through it. We all feel like we can beat the stock market. We can, you know, it's going to be crypto. It's going to be, and it, like, it's going to be this new thing that we're investing in. And all the people that came before, the other men, you know, I'd say men, because I think we're dumber than women. So I'm not trying to be biased, but I think, like, men just have this thing where they want to, like, intuitive, like they were just more like, want to make more money. I don't know.
Immortality complex, you know, we can,
I don't know what it is. I think men, we're just dumber with thinking that we can beat the system is what I'm trying to say before I get myself canceled. But it's young man syndrome. We all feel like I'm going to be the one that outsmarts it. And until you have 10 years of saying, you know what, I should just buy the damn index fund and call it a day because I'm an idiot too.
Yep. I'm feeling that a lot this year. This year I've been looking at my portfolio. I'm like, man, I am dumb. I should have just bought an S&P ETF and called it even.
in 2021, I mean, every person that you talk to, they should have been running a hedge fund.
Right.
For 12 billion.
And everyone's like, I'm up 7% this year. I'm doing great. I'm the smartest guy ever. It's like, yeah, but you know, the S&P is up 12%. So are you really that smart? You know,
what's your return over the last 5 years? That's what I want to know.
Yep.
No, it's young man syndrome. And that's what I was saying. That's reflective of TikTok. That's reflective of social media. It's everybody thinks that they can outsmart, and 99.9 don't.
Yeah.
Myself included.
Yep. Yeah. That's why the index funds exist. So do you think TikTok's the worst of the bunch, or is, you know, what about Reddit with the whole like Wall Street Bets craze, or even, you know, Twitter or X or whatever it's going by now? What do you think is like the worst platform for financial advice?
You know, I don't know, because I don't really go on those other platforms all that much. Mm-hmm. I really don't. I don't have enough experience with them to tell you. I just really stick to LinkedIn, and then I've got Facebook Business, which I really don't go on Facebook all that much anymore. I'd honestly just cancel my account if I didn't have that, you know, Facebook Business page.
Mm-hmm.
I don't use social. Any other social platforms. I feel like LinkedIn is the right place to conduct business, and it's the right corporate platform.
Mm-hmm. Just because it has those checks and balances where you can actually, you know, reply to a video and, you know, get some peer review a little bit.
Yeah. Not that the other ones can't work, but as a 43 year old man, I think that's the one that's age appropriate for me. And I think that's where I fit.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So speaking of some of the younger players out there in our space, one of the things I noticed that you had been doing and have continued to do is to just give some little bits of wisdom to some of the planners that are coming up through the ranks and just starting out. I've really appreciated watching that. We get a lot of people coming through our programs that are looking for bigger picture career guidance, best practices for growing my firm. Could you just speak a little bit just about that, you know, how that became something you wanted to do through social media and through posting? And we'd love to hear about that.
So I'll tell you, selfishly, it was when it starting out, I wanted to build an audience. And in the beginning, the first, it was about trying to have people see me post. Well, for the most part, most of the people who were on there and would engage are towards like a younger demographic and then were advisors themselves. So I thought to myself, I just kind of said, well, if I just give advice, like I kind of just share some of the things that, you know, best practices, good advice, how to build a little bit of a viewership, then by default, like when I do post something that is more of an advertisement or trying to get new business related, then I'll have a larger network to post to and it'll grow from there. I mean, that was just really my thought. Like, I just need people to like listen and engage and actually hear the message instead of get 4 views and then it fall off. So I started just sharing some of the, cause I built my practice. I've been doing it for 18 years and I built it from scratch. And you know, I didn't buy it. I didn't inherit it. It's one by one for 18 years. I brought in all my, every single client until I hired Zach and he brought over a little, you know, about 25, 30 clients with him. But other than that, every single person I brought in one by one over the years. So, and it's, I feel like the industry itself now is, I don't want to say easy, but you can build a practice the fastest in human history right now than ever before. And I say that because of a couple of reasons. One, you can identify where people are because of social media. You know, you can identify where an executive is, you can identify who a prospect is. You know when people are changing jobs or have a life event, or you can research people and then have something to talk to them about and get that conversation and get that relationship started easier than ever before than a cold call and trying to start a conversation over the phone or like somebody in your local network. You're like, oh, I know that person works at this company. I got to try and strike up a conversation with that person. So the ability to identify other human beings to talk to and prospect is the easiest it's ever been in human history. And two, there's the most amount of money that has ever existed in our financial systems ever in human history right now, this day. So the stock market has been democratized by the advent of the 401k and the IRA. Rewind before 1980, like the stock market was something for like rich people or wealthier people, upper middle. And you didn't buy stock over the phone. You didn't buy stock online. You had to have a broker in New York and you bought it over the phone. This is just 40 years ago, 30 or 40 years ago.
Yep.
That's how it worked.
Yeah.
Now you can buy it on your phone without ever talking to a human being. But it was something that was reserved, you know, for the upper middle and the wealthy, you know, people with connections, and then for just kind of a certain class of people. Now, the objection to that, because somebody threw this out to me, is like, well, everybody invested in the stock market in the 1930s. I'm like, shut up. That was like 60 years ago.
Well, it's also just, you know, when you're paying a $500 commission per trade, it only makes sense to do that trade if you're, you know, throwing around tens of thousands of dollars at a time. And most individuals just don't have that net worth to just you know, dump $30,000 into an individual stock to make the $500 commission worth it.
Here's a interesting fact for you, right? I worked for a guy, and he said he managed, he was like old school, like a broker back in the like mid 90s. And he said he made about $400,000 a year on about 10, 15 million was his book of clients. You do the math on that.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, when you see like Wolf of Wall Street, like, you know, he wasn't doing anything illegal, you know, mm-hmm. like that, but it was, you're always calling the client with a new idea. Oh, well, we got to get out of this and we got to get into that. We got to get out of this. Let's flip your 100 out of this stock and let's buy this stock. And yep, every time churning. You do that, it's a couple $1,000 commission.
Yeah. Yeah. $500 going out, $500 going in, $1,000 right there for a 15-minute phone call.
So, and then the third piece to finish my thought on for younger folks starting out, the third part of that is that our financial system from a tax perspective is also the most complex it's ever been in human history, in US financial history. So you have access to people, you have the most amount of money ever, and it's also the most complex for the middle class because of 401k rules and IRA rules and 403b rules and deferred compensation rules and life insurance and cash value life insurance and term life insurance and employer benefits that are offered and financial, like now there's, you got this buzzword financial planning. What is it all and how does it work together? How does it all fit together? Our profession 15, 20 years ago didn't really exist. It's still, in my opinion, in its infancy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So sure. I think for younger folks starting out, I tell this to Zach all the time, like you couldn't be in a better position at a better time in history. And they're also catching the money in motion with the boomers all shifting to retirement. Yeah. I don't think it could be a better time. And then you think of, I'm 43. You know, I used to be the younger person, and I'm starting to get, you know, I'm starting to be like middle of the road now, or even a little bit older when I'm in rooms at conferences and stuff. And, you know, the guys in their 50s and gals and girls in their, you know, 50s and 60s who actually practice what they preach, they're in the position to retire. They want to retire out and start. You've got these firms now, independent firms that can be passed down and yeah. sold. And for younger folks coming in, that's nothing but opportunity to buy these multi-million dollar assets and step in. I mean, you're really, I'm for the profession as a whole, I'm super pumped. I'm super excited. And I couldn't see a better time to be in it.
Yeah, definitely. That's a refreshing look. You know, we see a lot of doom and gloom out there in the world these days. So it is refreshing to, you know, have an idea that this is the best time you could ever possibly be in getting into the profession.
Well, I mean, if you think about it logically, right? Middle class is what? Is 80 million or 100 million households?
Mm-hmm.
Or something like, no, it's 100 million people, maybe 60 million households, something like that, right? So I'm a CFP in South Carolina. I think there's, if you look at the CFP board website, I believe there's 1,100 or 1,200 CFPs in the entire state of South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And then in North Carolina, I think there's like 3,000. So there's 5 million people in South Carolina, and there's 8 million people or 9 million people population wise. And then everyone moving to the Southeast, and there's 4,500 CFPs.
Yeah. Plenty of clients to go around.
I mean, just when you start thinking through the math logically on the opportunity, you know, I tell people we're not selling ironic t-shirts. You don't need 1,000 people buying something. You need 100 people who trust you to manage their assets and that you're going to be there for them from, you know, retirement to the grave, to the next generation. And that's all you need in order to have a phenomenal career. That's it.
This is Adam from the Biff Crew. Now, if you're listening into the podcast and you're finding our conversations of interest, if you're finding the material that we talk about helpful, if you're looking to take your knowledge of personal financial planning to the next level, then you need to consider the Bryant University and Biff CFP education program. This program was written and it's delivered by the Biff team. And one of the things that we pride ourselves on is being accessible to serve as your guides and support you for the entire CFP education journey. And all throughout that journey, you have access to practitioners and to experts that are going to help you to understand these concepts and also help to best prepare you for your CFP exam. So if you're looking for a CFP education program with great support and the Biff Bites crew, then the Bryant University Biff CFP Education is for you. For more information, visit BryantCFP.com.
So how much of your content of your business would you say is generated, you know, directly from video content? Do you have any idea to tell, you know, do people come in your door and say, hey, I saw your videos and loved your videos and that's why I'm here? Or is it kind of more subtle than that?
No, I tell you, that rarely happens. Mm-hmm. Rarely happens. It's just a combination of a bunch of things. It's just being in the community, being visible. But I don't know how it works. It just works.
Okay.
Is what I can, my practice has tripled in 5 years. Mm-hmm. So it's not just one thing. It's many different things. It's hiring Zach. It's opening a storefront. It's creating content. It's being one thing that I'm super lucky. I'm right over my computer as I stare out the door is the LPL corporate headquarters. It's like right there and 30 yards away from my front. Like that's been a huge help, you know. And I know that doesn't help your viewership, but that
open your office right next to HQ.
Well, I mean, there is something to be said about your geographic location. So if I was an advisor, I would 100%, I would not do the work from home thing. I would spend the money as part of my thinking from a marketing perspective. I would find a local attorney or a CPA or a property and casualty agency, and I would make that one of the major deciding factors in where I'm going to open my geographic location.
Oh yeah, just kind of piggybacking off of their research, because you know companies like Fidelity and Vanguard and all the, you know, the big boys out there put a lot of money into just researching what geographic regions make the most sense to open an office in, and just kind of, you know, see where they are and piggyback off of their research for free.
Yeah, if you open up an office next to your local accounting firm, you will get business if you're not an idiot. Like if you go over there and you have coffee and you hang out and you make friends and you just, you know, you don't come on too strong and you do it the right way, you will get business, because inevitably they have issues and they have to, oh well, let me go, you know, let me go talk to these guys, like they're right next door. And you will get business that way. Yeah. Let me go talk to Jerry. Let me go talk to Adam. They're 10 feet away. And then you will have people walking you over.
Yeah. Hey.
Geographic location wins every time.
Yeah, that's some good advice. And it's kind of you know, the opposite of the general trend of everyone saying, you know, go digital, work from home, everyone wants convenience. And you know, you do lose out on some of that, you know, physical world connections.
So, and I know there's different schools of thought, and I just think if you're going to manage somebody's money, like something of substance, I'm not talking about a $6,500 IRA. I'm talking about somebody who's worked for 40 years and has accumulated hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars. In the older mentality, yeah. There's always an exception to the rule, but the majority, and they tell me this when they come in, is they want to sit with somebody face to face, because you're going to get there's a vibe that you can only get from sitting with somebody face to face. There is a sense of security from a physical location. and the experience of coming into the office and sitting down and reviewing and going over things, and the it just gives it a different like look and feel to the whole experience. And there's a different comfort level with being able to reach out and touch somebody, to be able to give somebody a hug when they walk in the door and you say, you know, how are you? What's going on? I understand you, you know, it's tough. You know, you lost your husband. You've been married for 35 years. Like there's just a certain element to the relationship that, and this is my opinion, but you can only form, you know, face to face.
Yeah.
That's my opinion on it. And I would go, you know, if you're talking about subscription fees for, you know, for $100 a month. Yeah, that's fine. Digital is fine with that, 'cause it's low risk. Mm-hmm. But if you're transferring somebody $800,000, it's a different level of risk.
Right. Yeah. It is comforting. And I feel also even younger generations, as much as they love the video and the Zoom meetings and things like that, they do have just kind of a different experience when they come in person. You know, they might be more shy or, you know, more reserved, but I think they can appreciate the gravity of, you know, meeting a financial advisor in person, putting actual ink to paper, and, you know, kind of having that old school experience.
What it comes down to is everybody wants human connection.
Mm-hmm.
And the connection that you experience on social media isn't true. It's surface level. And I think what everybody is starved, because we're inundated with social, what everybody is starved for is real human connection.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens, that something magical happens face to face, one on one, with another human being. And even me, like I jokingly said when Adam popped on, you know, earlier, is like, oh, you look way different than your profile picture. So there's a certain and if you were here in person, we would connect at an even higher level, you know, because you're you know, I mean, it gets metaphysical. There's like, you know, physical vibration and we're energy, and you know, there's a lot more to it, but I'm 100% bullish on in-person, face-to-face. There's a certain vibe that people get from you that like, oh, this person cares. This person really does care about my success. You can take the time to explain things and concepts and just really get into it face-to-face with people. Unlike being on, you can do it on digital, but the human connection is not the same. Again, my opinion.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, that's great. That's it's good to get that opinion, because it, you know, it is something that's jammed down our throats these days. It feels like that everyone's digital, everyone wants Zoom. It's going to be the future. No one's going to meet in person anymore. So it is refreshing to, you know, see another take on that.
Listen, I'm a firm believer, and you can build and you can do anything that you want to do if you put your mind to it. If you want to build a digital business, if you want to build a digital subscription business with, and that's your jam, that's what you want to do, it'll work. If you want to do it in face, it'll work. You know, I think that you can do anything that you put your mind to, and the rest is just an opinion on what you're most comfortable with.
Yeah, definitely.
There's no wrong way to eat a Reese's.
Yeah. Excellent. So you've mentioned Zach a few times. So Zach was your, you know, first financial planning employee that you brought on. You know, I'm sure quite a few of our listeners are probably in Zach's shoes right now. Any tips you could give them on, you know, what made you decide to hire Zach? You know, what is it that you're looking for? Or, you know, cover letters, resume tips, interview tips, anything you can give to some of our younger listeners out there who are trying to score their first financial planning job?
Yeah. So, I mean, I would, first and foremost, I would take this with a grain of salt, because consider the source, but you know, resumes just make me throw up. You know, resume is like a dating profile. It's a bunch of hogwash. It's like, you know, you just completely embellish the smallest little like everybody grew their division, everybody managed and led, everybody, it's like, just stop. It's a necessary evil. Yes, you have to have it. But one of the reasons why I was comfortable with Zach wasn't because of his resume. It was because he made content, and I knew, I had a good sense of his personality and who, what he was about and his technical abilities and where he was at, because I watched him post content for a year. That's really what it comes down to. So my advice would be for younger folks to start thinking about creating some type of content for the industry, like with that in mind of how can I showcase my knowledge base, who I am, what I'm about, without asking for the job, but you want to showcase it. You want to put it out there, put together a video that's maybe targeted towards your peers about why you should take advantage of your employer sponsored 401k, or maybe why you shouldn't take advantage of your employer sponsored 401k. Like, I love when people have an opinion and they defend it. I don't care if you're right or wrong, have an opinion. I mean, that's what this country, it's our political system is rooted in, is, I mean, I think that's what makes our country great, or at least used to make our country great, is you've got one side that has an opinion of how things should go, and you have another side and an opinion how things should go. And it's both, as long as they're both rooted in logic and fact and good intent, well, somewhere, like, the system is set up so we arrive at a compromise that benefits everybody, right? I mean, that's what compromise is about. So my advice for, you know, the younger, you know, folks starting out is don't be shy. It's painful, I know. But that's the world that we're, and that will, you don't have to do it, but that will give you the, I think that will give you the biggest leg up. You know, and I put it out there when I was hiring, I had a bunch of people, I said, hey, make a piece of content. You know what I do, mm-hmm. Make something, send me a video, make me want to hire you.
That's quite the interview process. I don't think I've ever heard of anyone doing it that way, but I do like that. That's a great way to really, yeah, great way to get to know your candidates that way, way more than a piece of paper with some embellishments written on it.
Yeah, and it's I'm terrible at reading a resume and making a judgment. I'm terrible. I'm just horrible at it. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you're, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, you don't, hiring, and also maybe for the younger listeners, it's good to understand our perspective. So you're 40 something years old, you've got to practice. One of the biggest risks is hiring a young person into the practice. Why? It's not even the money. Now, yeah, we have to shell out your salary, but it's not even the money. It's at my age, at when you're in your 40s, it's time. And I find we got to put a year, two, 3 years in. Mm-hmm. And then if you decide to, you know, oh, this isn't a fit, or dude, I just put 3 years into now instead of 43, now I'm 46. Like, my timeline is running out. 3 years is a big chunk of time in your 40s to spend on somebody. You also have the optics of it. If you've hired somebody and it hasn't worked out, then you hire somebody else and it hasn't worked out, you introduce this person to all your clients at the firm. You're like, okay, well, what is he doing? Like, why can't he get this right? Well, because, yep. I'm a good financial planner. I'm not necessarily a good manager of people.
that's 100% right. Because when I was first starting out in the industry, I worked for this individual who had gone through, I want to say, six financial, you know, planning assistants in the last 10 years. And he had a reputation for just being an asshole. And that's why he couldn't hold on to people. And, you know, people knew him as the guy who drove away financial assistants, couldn't keep anyone in his firm at all.
Well, at some point, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. You know, at some point you go, well, what is this person doing to his employees? You got to, it starts to ask, you know, it begs the question, like, six, really? So There's, you know, that and there's also the security, you know, risk too, having access to social security numbers and personal information. That stuff, that is unbelievably nerve-wracking, because, you know, you're 15, 18, 20 years in, one wrong hire can destroy your reputation, can destroy your practice. Cause that's all this is. It's reputation. One person could destroy it. So I think it's important for younger folks to understand the risk on our end of the things that we worry about. It's not a corporate hire where you come and go. This is, you know, our livelihood that we've put it years and years and years and years and years into. So I think it's not just getting a job.
Yeah, it's very much a partnership type situation.
With that said, in our program, we have people, I'd say more than ever, changing their careers and wanting to land in personal financial planning. And I hear from some of them, I'm in your program because I must get the CFP before I get the planning job. And I think from our end, it creates challenges in the classroom because they're learning about these concepts without having the people or the experience to attach it to. But from your perspective, it sounds like if it was the right fit for your firm, CFP, no CFP, it's the right fit for your firm. Am I hearing that right?
Yeah. So I'm going to say something that might be a little bit controversial. I think before somebody gets a CFP, because I've had this conversation with Zach and this is what I've done with him. I think, and this is not a knock on the CFP by any, you know, shape or form. For me, it was a game changer. I was already had 7 years of experience though. Mm-hmm. If I was young, because I hear this all the time, I tell the young guys who DM me and message me, and I use guys as gender neutral because I'm from New York. People. Okay. So people, young men and women who DM me and ask me,
guys,
what are you doing? I mean, yeah. Even my wife yells at me for that. She's like, no, you got to say, I'm like, it's such a hard habit to break. So, I think that somebody starting out, a great thing for them to do is the EA, is to become an enrolled agent, or at the very least, you know, do like a tax prep class, learn how to do a 1040. If you can get them through the EA, get them through the EA. I think that designation or that is more valuable starting out than a CFP, because quite frankly, you could do the CFP and you're a year or 2 or 3 years of experience and you're not doing CFP level work yet. Nobody's trusting you just because you have a CFP designation doesn't mean you're going to walk into a wealth management firm and get a bunch of, you know, multi-million dollar clients. Cause you haven't earned your stripes yet. You don't know what you're doing yet. Clinically. Yeah. You can check the boxes, but working with multi-million or working with people is way different than just checking the boxes on the financial planning process and making sure that everything is, you know, compliant and disclosed. That's a different kind of thing. The EA, I think, will give you it's shorter, so it'll go quicker and you'll get a tax base much faster. I believe the tax knowledge will give you a much higher level of immediate usable information that you can now, that just going to make you a better advisor longer term. Mm-hmm. So the ability to prepare a 1040, the ability to understand, you know, some basic business concepts, tax deductions, above the line, below the line, like how to calculate AGI, MAGI, for all that stuff. That's the vocabulary that will allow you to immediately earn credibility with the older folks who have the money.
Yeah.
And it will give you some immediate credibility with yourself, which will allow you to feel comfortable speaking to other people. And then thirdly is most firm owner, you know, most established people have a CFP, but if I'm looking through resumes and I go, what's this person has an EA and they can do tax prep work, I'm already a CFP, so I'm not creating a redundancy. That's a complement to what I'm already doing. I think that's a competitive advantage over, oh, okay, here's, it's rather than hiring another CFP to the team. Now you have another thing that will complement what the, maybe the older or the experienced advisor is already doing in their firm, in their practice. And I'll tell you right now, everybody wants to start incorporating tax prep work to some degree in their practices, because the accounting profession is just dying, or it's 100%. Really struggling. It's struggling to bring new talent in. So I think it's just ripe for disruption. Then after a couple of, like, get the EA, get your licenses, some FINRA stuff, or maybe you don't need it because you're all right, whatever. And then do this, then do the CFP.
That makes so much more sense. I mean, yeah. I'm all for that. And what is nice about that too, is early in your career, taxes, it's either one way or it's the other way. And you have to follow the rules. It's very rules driven, right? It's driven by the Internal Revenue Code. So there's no fuzzy area for a planning recommendation, right? Well, we could do this, we could do that, we could do this. It's just, these were the events that happened last year. This is how it needs to be on the 1040. And I like how that segues into the planning work too, because then you could prepare the 1040 as a young advisor, go sit in your office next to you during the presentation, be the expert on hand, and then see how that integrates into the bigger financial plan. That's excellent. I really like that.
Also, and here's what's happening too from a psychological perspective, right? So when you could be 25, 26, 27 years old, it's binary. It is or it isn't. Taxes, they are or they are not. I prepared, here's Zach. He prepared this. This is, you know, the tax return. It's done. This is what has transpired, right? If anybody wants to question that, they can. So if you're the 60-year-old, who's worked their entire life, who has $2 million, they can say, well, let's verify that. Sure. And then you can get another opinion from a CPA or, you know, somebody who's more experienced and verify, yeah, that is actually how the tax code works. We have it right, because it's all done in software anyway. And it's kind of, right. So yes, it is correct. Now the 27-year-old just moved up the totem pole. Now he or she has some actual damn credibility with the 60-year-old. How the industry has worked is it's always it's this product, it's this investment, it's this thing. This is better than what you're doing. Well, you can't prove any of it. It's all subjective. It's all, oh, well, you should be in this fund or this strategy or this annuity, or we can do this and that. And it's just, taxes are simple and it's binary and it's immediate credibility, and you can. If you don't want to partner with somebody else, I talk about this, and I know you see me talk about it. It would be a great loss leader, you know, as a client acquisition tool for somebody who wants to start their own thing. You can easily find 30, 40 people that want to get 1040s done. And yeah, that's grunt work, and it's $300, $400, $500 a return, and you're not making all that much. But if you do 40 returns, what do you have? You got everything.
Yeah.
You got everything, and you have nothing but opportunity to go back to those people for the other 7-8 months out of the year and say, hey, I proactively reviewed your taxes. I think this strategy will make people are dying for that.
Yes.
Yeah. And then it's like, oh, I noticed, by the way, you paid Merrill Lynch 1.25% on your managed portfolio, you know, like, and then you're also in these mutual funds with an average expense ratio of X, or it's kicking off these capital gains for the year, which flows through to your schedule, you know, your schedule D on your capital gains. And that's what's driving the, you know, why you're so pissed off and having to write a check. Well, I can literally fix all of that for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, I'm not doing that.
I just outlined like the perfect scenario ever. But
well, you know what though, the big shops on the tax prep front are charging per form. There's very little human interaction. You drop your papers off if you need something else, that you get an email, and then your returns are done. You pay for it. Maybe you send a check to the IRS. I mean, it's becoming that impersonal at the big shops.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that. Thanks for sharing that. I think it's going to help a lot of people that are listening to this.
And that's Jerry, also, as you're starting out, there are many firms that will not allow you to touch taxes or even go near them.
Yeah.
So that might be a decision point in your process and where you're looking to launch your career or maybe continue your career or do your own thing. If that's an avenue that you want to go, because I've put this content out for years and I have people, I'd say all the time because it's exaggerated, but I'd say once a month I get a DM from somebody that says, hey, I just finished my EA, or I did what you said and it's working, it's real. And I see it too on a daily basis with Zach.
Yeah. It's great advice. Definitely actionable advice, which is the best type of advice.
There's too much fluff out there. It's just as a young advisor starting out, the number one rubric that you need to solve, and this will unlock everything that you hoped and dreamed and wished for in your entire life. One thing: where am I going to find new clients? If you solve that problem for yourself, you will not have to worry about an institution, a relationship, an older senior, a referral source, anything. If that's the only problem that you have to solve, and once you solve that problem, then you write your own ticket for the rest of your life. Sky is the limit.
That's great. Great advice. I think that's a good place to start to wrap this up. Thank you so much for coming on, Anthony. Really learned a lot and, great insights on just the industry and, everything that's changing and, everything going on in the world right now. So thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, really appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time and sharing all that expertise and wisdom.
Definitely. Well, that does it for this week. If you're looking for more great content, make sure to go over and check out biffbytes.com for all of our back episodes and videos. Well, thanks again, Anthony. It's been a pleasure having you, and we will see all of our listeners next week.